Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine, like, the room you'd been in all day and that you were your most depressed in. How is that arousing?
It's a really bad space,
I want to have loads of sex in this room where I've just been
crying,
masturbating and feeling sad.
We called this podcast Yeah, But It's Not Simple As That because we wanted to deal with questions that don't have easy answers. And when it comes to stuff around mental health and relationships, there are no easy answers. And yet, it feels like a kind of difficult time to talk about those subjects because it feels like there's been every relationship article that you could ever read, and mental health has now become this, like, weird, brandy buzzword that everyone wants to do coverage on and talk about, but no one's really saying anything that helpful. And we do need to talk about these things because with all this new focus and coverage on mental health, it's not got any easier for someone in a relationship where depression and anxiety play a big role, or it's not got any easier for a girl being called a psycho or mad because some boy doesn't like her anymore. And so even though mental health is this huge topic which we're not even going to try and cover all of, we just want to focus on this one question about love and your mind, which is, can you love someone when you don't always love yourself? Because if you're feeling a bit low or depressed and you don't know if you can be there for your boyfriend or your girlfriend, you don't just want sort of nice platitudes, you want answers. And this week we're going to kind of get that with three very different perspectives. One of them is spectacularly honest, one very practical, and one's this radical new approach. Let's start with Emma. She's got some first-hand experience of this. Can you kind of explain what we're about to hear?
No, but I will. I will give it a go. Basically, this is me talking to my ex-boyfriend about one of the reasons we broke up, I guess, which was that we just didn't have sex for about 6 months because we were both freaking out too much.
And so, like, how much was your mental health affecting stuff at that time?
It was kind of like the main issue. It was both of us, really. He I don't think he'd mind me saying this, but had quite just bad issues with anxiety and not going out a lot, and conversely I was just quite depressed. And it also, around the time, I guess, that we started not sleeping together, written this article about sexual assault, which was something that I'd experienced just a few years prior, and hadn't spoken about it before, hadn't told him about it before, just hadn't really thought about it or realized it until that moment. So that was definitely a factor in it as well.
How did you have this conversation? Like, where did you go?
We went to a nice place in London that I like to refer to as Secret Liverpool Street, which is ironic now that I think of it, because that's where we accidentally went on our first date and where we met.
Oh my God.
Which I'm just realizing now.
You know how to set the scene.
Yeah.
Did you seem awkward? Did he seem awkward? Was it just fine?
No more awkward than we normally are as people. We're quite comfortable with each other, so that was all right. afterwards felt a bit weird. He said it felt like free therapy. I said, I feel sick.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I think so. Seems fine. Hi, Dean.
Hello.
I think we should just chat normally and not say hello first, and then we'll just forward to it. Because I don't really know what I'm going to say.
Oh,
I haven't really thought about it. Like, I just figured it'd be easier if I didn't think about it and then I just sat down and had a chat.
I think so.
I get loads of validation and stuff from it, and then it wasn't as important for you. So there was like this like weird clash, I thought, where like I really needed it really desperately to like feel like worth something or something.
Yeah.
And then so like not doing it made me feel really rubbish, and then you just felt bad also for like not feeling the same way, and it was just like this like weird, and then talking about it is good, but then it's also just like such a mood killer that then like it was like a weird like
cycle. So we needed to talk about it, but talking about it was a turn off. I feel like I needed it too, and I do need it. Maybe only recently have I realized that I need it to not feel like a piece of shit, but then but then with us it was like I don't think I knew that then, or something. Can I just be as open as I want?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess, like, and the thing that we haven't mentioned is that we're both mad also, so that, like, so, like, I think, so that complicated things, and I think that, like, it
just... Do you remember when I spent a year inside?
Yeah.
I was like, you're gonna get a job this week? It's like, yeah, probably. I was just, like, in the house for, like, a year.
That was the other thing. Like, at the time, like, our days were, like, so different. You just, like,
so
I'd
sit at home waiting for you, like a dog.
And then I'd be like, oh, it's bedtime now. And you were like, good night.
Yeah, because I'd been there all day. And it's, like, the idea of, like, basically, imagine, like, the room you'd been in all day and that you sort of faced your demons in.
Yeah.
And, like, were you most depressed in. How is that arousing?
It's it's a really bad space.
I want to have loads of sex in this room where I've just been, like,
crying,
masturbating, and feeling sad. Like, that is so fucked. So, in hindsight, it's like, how do you?
Yeah, we really de-sexed that flat a lot.
I should have lived somewhere else.
Yeah.
Although, the time we lived together was some of my favourite time. Like, I loved that apartment and I love living together.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't conducive to good sex.
Yeah. Like, as time went on, it just kind of got, like, more and more frustrating.
Yeah,
it was
just like...
For both of us, cause it was just, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, just, I guess, like, expect when that thing that you said before about, like, you know, physically touching people and having to deal with them being there, it's very like, it's like a much different experience, and like the intimacy is something that you really struggled with. So like, what, like, how did it just make you, like, how did it make you feel? What was like, was it unpleasant? Was it just like really anxiety inducing? And like, why?
Yeah,
what
pretty
was
much
happening in your head?
I feel like at its worst, it's like this weird, it's kind of like this weird like rage. And it has nothing to do with you or anyone that I've ever been with. I feel like it's some weird internal shit.
Yeah.
It's kind of like this, like, thing. It's almost like, at its worst, there's this moment where I almost black out and I don't even realise that I'm, like, biting someone or, like, whatever. Like, yeah. And then... And then there's, like, instant regret and guilt and, like, self-loathing.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, you saw me hit myself and stuff. It was pretty bad. It was like, it's just, like, self-hatred and stuff. Yeah, it's, like, it's really hot, rageful anxiety attack.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know, I feel like that's kind of...
Yeah, because I think like the worst times it would be like something like that would happen maybe, and then you would get really angry, and I would just like have so many weird conflicting feelings about it that I would just like didn't know what else to do, but I would just sit there and like cry, and it was just like really miserable.
It was not a good place to put someone. Like,
but then like I would basically just get like really miserable, and I just get kind of like not like comatose, but I find it really hard to like, I don't have any energy, like I definitely don't have any emotional energy, and then at the end I completely like stopped being able to help you, because when you would go through bad periods it was just lots of anxiety, and like the way that you dealt with it was like the opposite of how I would deal with it. I like to just like, I would just want to like lie there and not speak. I place a lot of, because I place like so much importance on it, and like I was just like, oh no, this is a disaster, and I was just like,
place so much importance
on sex, and like the fact that it was like missing, or like became missing, made me really sad. Like,
what, sort of when you realised?
Yeah, and just like time just kept going on, and I just got like increasingly really sad about it. Just because it felt like it, that thing where like I can kind of like get on with stuff and just kind of just accept that it's a thing, and like we had so much other good stuff that it kind of in a way was didn't feel like anything was missing. It was just like I would then just randomly maybe like just see some people that I didn't know holding hands, and then just be like, oh
yeah,
and then I would get deeply sad about it, and then I would remind me that that physical element wasn't there as much as I would like it to be, and then I realized how important it was to me. So we're open with each other, like to the point where it was just like sometimes really blunt, and then I remember, I don't know whether like you actually meant this, but there was a time where I remember you saying to me like, there are so many things I would rather be doing than having sex, and I was just like, how dare you, like in my head.
Yeah, I have a habit of saying fucking stupid things when I'm in a weird headspace. Yeah, I feel like that was just insensitive and cruel and sort of dumb, because sex is good and it's one of the best things you can do, and it's free if it's with someone you love. I don't think that you should be in a sexist relationship. That's stupid.
Yeah,
like it's very important, and I feel like I've learned that since, and like about myself, like I also need it. Everyone needs it. It's like I mean, some people, Stephen Fry doesn't, but like he doesn't do it.
Doesn't
he? It's expungible.
SpongeBob.
Asexual. Anyway, that's what I read somewhere. They're probably all asexual, Patrick and Squidward.
He's like SpongeBob.
Yeah. But
I've got to say, like, I found that kind of incredible to listen to. I don't think I've ever heard that kind of conversation between two people before. Did it have, I mean, I guess one of the things that's surprising about it is that you talk about how uncommunicative you were in the relationship, and then you talk with such honesty and openness now.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, generally, I mean, in retrospect, it's a lot easier to decompress things anyway. At the time, it just felt almost too frustrating, and like we were talking about it too much, but just communicating the same thing over and over and over again and never actually getting to the root of the problem, because it's not like you had to break up first before either of us could unpack any of it. And I don't know if you can tell, but basically what we did when we broke up was just removed the sex, moved out, and then we became friends immediately.
And so after having that conversation, did you feel personally like affected by it? Did you feel like, oh, I got a lot of clarity on things I didn't, or was that just kind of part and parcel of how you talk now?
It is part and parcel, but I also did just feel a bit sad, really, because it did kind of bring to the surface that I'm probably not going to have that with anybody else. Like, it's a very, very unique relationship that I'm glad, but I'm just glad I still have it in some respects.
Mm.
And yeah, that's kind of it.
Thanks very much to Emma and Dean. As much as anything, I mean, that's just really sad, because they've obviously got such a connection, but it just couldn't withstand what was going on within their relationship. But is that inevitable in every single circumstance? Or are there things you can do that can prevent things like that happening? Well, the next person we wanted to speak to was Emily Reynolds, who's just written this book, A Beginner's Guide to Losing Your Mind, : How to Be Normal in Your 20s with Anxiety and Depression. Because she writes a lot about this kind of stuff, relationships, mental health, and her view is, yes, there are steps you can take to make things easier. She spoke to Hannah Ewens.
So say you're going out, you're dating, and you're on a first date with somebody. What kind of point would you suggest bringing up your mental health?
I am personally a massive fan of telling someone, like, as soon as is physically possible. So probably not like an opener on Tinder, like, hey, I'm depressed, but like pretty early on. Like when I was doing online dating, I would tell people before I ever met up with them. And when I like met people in real life, I would always tell them, like, definitely first or second date every time.
Has it ever gone wrong when you've kept it back for a while?
Yes, extremely badly wrong, which is why I do this. So one of my relationships when I was a lot younger, I was like quite embarrassed about having mental health problems and kind of thought if I don't talk about it, then maybe it won't happen again, which obviously it didn't happen. But I didn't tell someone for like 9 months, maybe. We were like in quite a serious relationship, or as serious as a relationship can be at like 18. And then he started, like, he went on this rant about like self-harm and like depression was like really selfish and like anyone who killed themselves was really selfish. And he talked about his ex who had got really depressed when her dad died, and like the only thing he was concerned about was that she didn't want to have sex with him anymore. And it was like obviously like really horrible to hear that from someone that I've been with for a really long time. And I think if I told him a lot earlier, he probably would have done the exact same rant, but I wouldn't have had to hear it when I actually had feelings for him.
Is there something like kind of difficult there though? Like, I'm just thinking of myself, if I came out in my first kind of date with someone, I would be thinking like, I kind of hate that I'm making this a part of my identity to the extent that I'm having to say this on a first date.
I think it's maybe about tone, like the way that you tell someone, like don't tell them as if you're like announcing some massive thing, like some sort of dark secret. I think just like saying it in like the most casual, throwaway way as possible is probably the best way of dealing with that.
So when you're in a relationship with someone, what do you think the best way is to go about helping someone with anxiety or depression?
For me, I think like the most useful thing is like actual practical stuff. Like obviously emotional support and like being there for someone, listening to them is really important in any relationship. But I think doing practical things, like people with depression often struggle to like do the dishes or like open their mail, like really basic practical things. And I think helping someone out by like cooking them dinner or like going through their posts with them, like doing their dishes, just like really basic stuff can like really be a good way of helping them, I think. I mean, it really helps me.
But what are kind of limitations of that? Like, I know when I get in relationships, my issue is having to pull back from allowing that person to basically become a caregiver.
Yeah, I think that's a problem. I think as long as it's like a temporary thing, so like if I'm really depressed, then my boyfriend will do that stuff for me. But I think, yeah, as you say, it's like really important to have boundaries and make sure that that person then, when you're feeling a bit better, like you do lots of stuff for them. Or like if you can't do stuff around the house when you're depressed, like try and make it up to them. It's sort of like, you know, like giving emotionally or whatever, just like, or like just saying that you appreciate them doing it, I think can like go a really long way in making it feel less like a carer.
When does it become something that's like you're caring for them too much?
I think for me, it's probably when my own mental health starts to suffer quite a lot. And I think that can happen for people who don't even have like severe mental health problems. Like it can be like a massive emotional burden to look after someone all the time. And people don't really say it because it sounds like they like resent their partner or something, but I don't think that's the case. Like I know it's like much more difficult to be in a relationship with me when I'm depressed than it is when I'm stable, because I can't do most of the stuff that I can do when I'm stable, when I'm depressed. So I think when it starts to impact my own mental health, looking after someone else, that's probably when I'd have to say, like, I need this, I need this, and I need this from you. Or, like, you know, try and look after myself a bit more, try and, like, actively focus on myself a bit more, which I don't think is necessarily a selfish thing to do.
So what would you personally do if, say, your significant other is, like, feeling really shit and going through a really tough patch with their mental health, and you want to just go out and they're kind of like, I suppose they're being like, I need your help. And even if they're not actively saying it and asking for it, you kind of feel that guilt, like you need to be there and not go out at all.
I think, well, in like any relationship, it's really healthy to like go and do your own thing and like hang out on your own with your mates and stuff. I actually think it's even more important if one of you got, or both of you have mental health problems, because like you say, you do feel guilty, you like feel an emotional burden. I think if someone is like actively having like a crisis, then obviously don't go and get pissed. But if they're just like experiencing a period of low mood, I think you can still go and do it. I think talking about it and talking about things that might upset them, like, you know, like amend your plans, basically, like go out and like come back a bit earlier or like keep in touch with them. I think there's like definitely a way to like work around it without like completely giving up your own autonomy and like your own time and fun and stuff.
If your relationship becomes a lot of like you staying in and kind of looking after each other, or one person looking after the other, it almost becomes like you forget who you are outside of that mental health cocoon.
Yeah, that's the thing I talked about a lot in the book. It was like my therapist after a few sessions asked me like, oh, do you actually want to get better? And I don't think I did, because my whole identity was around feeling depressed or being mentally ill, basically. I had like literally no idea how to operate outside it, and like, I still struggle, like when I'm feeling stable and stuff, I still like am quite preoccupied with my mental health, because I'm like, oh shit, like I don't know what to do, like I don't know how to be normal. And I think that can be a massive problem that is exacerbated by relationships, because you sort of like feed into each other's, I mean, I guess it's like codependency, isn't it? It's you don't know what to do outside of that relationship, basically.
Yeah, the relationship almost doesn't even work outside of that bubble, because it is, that is how you function. You don't really even know how to have fun and be well together.
Yeah, sometimes you're like, what do normal couples do? Like, how do we do this? And then when you actually end up in that situation, you're like, oh shit. And you're worried, like when me and my boyfriend first got together, we were both like really ill, then we both have got like steadily better. And I remember thinking like, oh shit, what if we don't actually love each other when we're not mentally ill? And luckily that hasn't been the case, but I think like it's a genuine concern. You're like, you don't know who you are outside of it, and you worry that you don't have anything in common, like outside of being miserable together.
One question as well I was going to ask was, how should you respond when someone's poor mental health is basically making them be really unreliable, or it stops them from communicating properly? Like, for example, if they're like not turning up when you're going to meet them, or they're cancelling on you all the time.
I think with like a lot of things, there's definitely like a way that you can compromise. So if someone's if I cancelled on any social thing, it's probably because I'm really anxious, or I don't want to go, I don't want to leave the house at all. So I guess like trying to ask them why they're doing those things, if they'll tell you, and trying to like come up with a compromise, like, oh, they don't want to go to the pub, like I'll go around their house so they don't have to leave the house. Or also, I think it's important to remember that mental health doesn't like automatically like make you a dickhead. And I think that when I look back at past relationships and I've acted like an absolute twat, like most of the time I've blamed it on my mental health, and it's actually been nothing to do with my mental health at all. Like having a mental health problem doesn't actually make you like unreliable or mean or any of those things. And it was just me being unreliable and mean, and then being like, oh, it's my mental health. So I think if you're the person that has mental health problems, kind of trying to like look in the mirror a bit and be like, which parts of this are actually me struggling with things, and which parts of this are me not taking responsibility for shitty behavior in a relationship, that can be quite useful as well. Like I say, this is someone that has done that a lot.
Yeah, I guess this, it's just such a nuanced thing, because everyone's mental health is different. But it's almost like when we're talking about these things, there are one set of questions and answers where one of them's going through a short period, say, of depression, and has never had it before, and it's perhaps tied to things that are going on in their life. And another set of questions and answers for someone who is ill long term.
Yeah, I don't think there's like any piece of advice that is like universally applicable, because like, well, like, as every relationship is different, like every circumstance of mental health problems like manifest in different ways. They make people feel and behave in different ways. So I think it's important, like when you're trying to like come up with a plan with your partner, or like trying to talk about like your boundaries and stuff, that you remember it's like completely individual, and it's completely up to you, and it's like completely, you know, like your decision how to deal with things.
And do you kind of understand if someone was like, you know what, mate, you're really nice, but I'm really stressed out, and I don't think I can, I just don't understand about it. I don't think that it's something that I can take on in a relationship.
I do think it's fair enough, like if someone doesn't want to take it on, like even if you're pretty stable, like I do understand why someone might be put off. Because like obviously there's like a lot of stigma around mental health problems, and I've had people like on Tinder or whatever say like the most ill-informed things. But actually, there is also, aside from the like shitty stereotypes, it is actually quite hard to be in a relationship when you're mentally ill or with someone who's mentally ill. I don't think that that should be like a thing we shouldn't say because it's true. So I do get it if people don't want to put up with it or they can't deal with it themselves.
So when one of you or both of you are ill, probably the last thing that you're going to be able to do is have sex. I mean, poor mental health is really linked for a lot of illnesses to low sex drive.
Yeah, and also a lot of antidepressants and antipsychotics and stuff basically like kill your libido.
So what do you do if you're with somebody and they just don't want to have sex?
I think like here is probably like a good time to like refresh yourself on like general consent anyway. Like if someone doesn't want to have sex, then you don't like pester them to have sex, but that's someone that you've like met on a night out or like your long-term partner. And I also think it's really important not to take it personally, because like if someone's really depressed and they don't want to have sex, that's not because they like suddenly find you repulsive or like they don't want to have sex with you. They just don't want to have sex. And a thing that I've heard a lot from like across the board from people who don't want to have sex when they're feeling depressed or whatever is that they want to have sex, but they just don't want to have sex. So I think if you're a partner, then probably try your best not to take it personally. But on the other hand, if you or the person that doesn't want to have sex, I do think it's important to kind of like reassure your partner and just say like, you know, oh, I don't want to have sex because I'm too anxious or I'm too depressed, or like actually explain what's going on and saying like, I still find, like explicitly saying, I still find you attractive. You know, I'm like, I still love you, and being reassuring that like, I think you're beautiful, I think you're hot, whatever.
Thanks very much to Emily and to Hannah. And you know, like, I think that conversation is a really good starting point. And it kind of makes me think a bit about the future of this issue, which I hope is centered in political campaigning, that we can make it easier for everyone with every severity of illness to have those kinds of conversations and get further help if they need it. And so the last person I wanted to speak to, looking to the future, is Hannah Perry. She's a performance artist, and her take on this is a bit different. She thinks we need to challenge our stereotypes. She's not minimizing the impact of mental health issues, but she's questioning whether what we think of as, I don't know, like acting psycho is actually something that needs to be dealt with, or whether it's something that should be embraced.
Withdrawing man and hysterical woman. Withdrawing man and hysterical woman. You are a cunt and I hate you. You better stay out of my fucking way, because if I see you, I'm gonna fuck you up. Beyonce has hot sauce in her bag. In the video, she's holding a baseball bat which says hot sauce on it. This summer, ex-wife is on fire.
So it seems like the problem is that the woman has gotten hysterical, when actually it's that the situation is wrong and it's the way in which you vocalize or deal with something. And then it ends up in this vicious cycle of like the withdrawing makes the woman hysterical, the hysterical makes the man withdraw. And I think that can be quite a vicious cycle sometimes, and that I think breeds this like, oh, she's a psychopath, because you know the closing down and the being silent is seen as more logical, right? Because you're not actually saying anything or doing anything. It's
you
know, it's there's not kind of anything to criticize there, except for, you know, and it's even dismissed that that's a problem.
Still vivid and violent. Always violent. It's not working. I'm sorry. Please, let's get back together. I still love you. It's over. Promise it's not forever. Forever is over, and I've met someone else. You're not rid of me. I'm leaving.
This idea of like a psycho or hysterical, or I think that's come from like scared men being frightened by like women's like power or behavior.
Yeah.
And their kind of strength or something. So then it's just a way to kind of like defuse that. You know, just burn them at the stake.
If you're feeling down, I can feel that.
Get rid of them.
I don't love you anymore, but I'm insecure. Or do I? And am I? I don't know. I'm obsessed and repulsed, livid and fragile. I could cry daggers. I could have gone to your house and bricked the window as planned, but Charlie talked me out of it, and besides, you weren't there. If there wasn't a chance of it hitting you or your laptop, I wasn't interested. You say aggressive, I say assertive. Let's call the whole thing off. Damn, once you hate someone, it seems like everything they do, everything they say is offensive. Damn, chill, my status ain't even about you. Surveillance is, simply put, the observation and or monitoring of a person. Click on his dick and I grope you in a Facebook comment. Connecting with each other, which is all we really want to do. And this is the sort of manipulative behavior you want out of your life.
That's a stereotype as well, you know, this idea of like not being respectful to women, not understanding how, you know, to be equal in a relationship, like their stereotypes to which you can play up to as well, like bro. You know, it's just another, it's just the opposite end of the cliche. And it's boring. It's boring. And actually, like, you know, these things do need to be poked fun at because they are stupid and they're a joke. When I was making a lot of work and doing a lot of research around this, it was around the time that the Beyoncé album released Lemonade. And I kind of feel like that's the, like, a kind of, like, you know, I mean, she hints at that herself, you know, this jealous or crazy. I mean, what is it? Like, and I think that her whole, like, album was embracing this, like, her emotions, actually, and being like, no, these are my emotions, and I've got a right to be upset.
Yeah, But It's Not Simple As That was produced by Sam Bonham at Rethink Audio. I'm Sam Wolfson. We'll be back soon.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.